right. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. For those of you, this is your first time tuning in. The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. And as a club, we do not only have this radio show, we also put on other screenings and various other events. So this week, you can join us tomorrow at 6 in the Norm for Dead Ringers. So hope to see you there. But today, you'll notice there is no Hannah, but we have a very, very special guest, first time on the podcast. Welcome, Madeline.
Hello.
So Madeline is our rom-com expert, certified by the board. And yeah, that's the theme for today's episode. It's going to be rom-coms. We got some very fun, very special, very exciting discussions coming up for you guys. But of course, as per usual, we got some ads, we got some PSAs, so we'll be right back after those.
What a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Are you hungry? I think I'm hungry. I think we should get ourselves something nice for our beach day.
Oh yeah?
Oh my god, I know the perfect place. Cockney King's Fish and Chips is literally just around the corner. We should go there. It is the best fish and chips in Vancouver.
Oh my god, yes, absolutely. Let's go right now.
Cockney King's Fish and Chips, Kitsilano. On Cornwall Avenue, between Cypress and Walnut. It's the best fish and chips in town, but don't take our word for it. Try it yourself. If Kitsilano isn't your neighborhood, check out Cockney King's in Burnaby or New Westminster.
Every adventure begins with a spark of possibility, and Scouts Canada volunteers are the ones who bring it to life. Whether it's guiding a hike, teaching new skills, or planning the next big adventure, they create opportunities for youth to grow, connect, and thrive. Volunteering is about more than activities. It's about courage, connection, and unforgettable memories. Whatever your passion, there's a role for you at Scouts Canada. Adventure awaits. Take our online quiz and find your perfect role at scouts.ca/volunteer.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus, located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
All right, so we're back, summer session, Real World. We'll be talking about rom-coms. Yay. So I, going into this, had seen like no rom-coms. Dedicated listeners will know I'm a bit of a rom-com skeptic, I will say. It takes something about rom-coms just brings out like the film like critic in me, and it's like, oh, I don't want to be so critical, but I find that I am. So like, I want to know, Madeline, like, what makes rom-coms so appealing for you?
They're just so fun, and also, yeah, like, this sounds so cheesy, but I just like that they're stories about people, like very real everyday people, especially the ones we're talking about today. I'm like, these all feel like, well, maybe not so much Anyone But You, but Harry Met Sally and Crazy Stupid Love, I feel like they feel like very real people that, yeah, you would know in real life. So it's kind of, don't know. That's the part I like about it.
Yeah, no, totally. And then, you know, kicking it off with When Harry Met Sally was like the first time that you kind of saw this movie.
I only saw it for the first time earlier this year with my mom. Oh. And I did my first year at UVic. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, Katie, was like, she had watched it for an English class. And she was like, this movie is so good. Like, yeah. you would love it. And I just like never got around to watching it. So I finally did this year. And I was like, I totally get why this is such a... like quoted,
yeah,
and yeah, referenced movie,
like,
I guess,
a classic,
because
yeah.
I was like, I was watching it and I was like, oh, I've heard this referenced like a million times.
Oh yeah, yeah, like that was definitely, because we watched this together, like, mm-hmm. not for the first time for you, but first time for me,
for you, yeah.
And there were definitely like so many moments where I'm like, oh my god, I didn't realize this was from that movie, or yeah. like I'd heard that line out of context or in like a TikTok audio or something. I was like, oh my god, yes. I know that one. Like, obviously there's like the deli scene, mm-hmm. and you know, going in, I knew that one, but I didn't know that the woman who's like, oh, I'll have what she's having, is the director's mom.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah. either. Oh my god, that's so cool,
so awesome. Like, even the director, I know he said, like, because he's done like a bunch of like Princess Bride,
yeah,
obviously,
it's Rob Reiner, like, so many
Spinal
cool
Tap, like,
yes.
which I love. Like, this is Spinal Tap is like one of my favorite mockumentaries. I think it's so interesting how he's kind of able to bounce between styles,
yes, and like genres,
yeah,
yeah.
And like, you know, this is just like really like the hard hitting like rom com greats. So you got like Nora Ephron, like,
yes.
writing.
Oh, we love Nora Ephron.
She kills it. Like, she was on top of that rom com game in the 80s, yes. and 90s. That is crazy. Like, I didn't even know, like, you know, she did like Sleepless in Seattle, like all these,
yes.
other huge rom com movies.
Very like, yeah, 80s, 90s,
yeah.
like rom com. And you can tell this is like an 80s rom com when you're,
oh,
watching,
yeah.
it. Like, it, in some sense, it feels kind of timeless, but it's also like, you're like, wow, this is so,
yeah.
80s.
Oh my god. Like, you see them come on screen with like their big hair and you're like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh my, and especially Sally's hair, like, yeah. throughout the movie, it's, you're like, oh my god.
It just gets,
wow.
bigger and bigger. Yeah. No, I really do. Like, how this film establishes, like, the passage of time.
Yes.
Though, like, I feel like some movies do really struggle with that, but I liked,
yeah.
how explicit it was, like, oh, 3 years later, da-da-da, da-da-da. But, like, you know, we can imagine kind of, like, fill in the blanks what's happened with those,
mm-hmm.
characters between those times. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm missing out on anything by not having seen those, like,
no,
3 years.
No, not
at all. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I can imagine, you know, Sally would have been doing this, and then, you know, Harry would have been doing whatever. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's... They write the characters in such a way that these gaps aren't, like, they don't feel like you're missing anything. It just,
no.
feels like a logical jump in time.
Yeah, it feels like a logical, yeah, like, progression of time. And, yeah, I feel like, too, like, you see them at different points,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of sets up where they are in their lives when it,
yeah.
finally kind of, like, picks a period of time to follow them through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it does feel like they're very, like, intentional with the moments that they choose. And
totally.
I do appreciate that the romance takes time to develop. Like,
mm-hmm.
I really appreciate a good, like, sort of like friends to lovers moment in a movie, because it just feels more authentic. And even like in real life, I know it's like I gravitate towards that sort of thing. It's,
mm-hmm.
like going into something with this like romantic pretext, sometimes it feels too forced. I know it's not like,
yes.
with some rom-coms of like where they hit it off immediately. It's like, oh, come on, like, I want you guys to like know each other as people first, you know?
Yes, I love a friends to lovers,
yeah.
like romance or rom-com. Another good one that's like more recent is Love, Rosie with Sam Claflin and,
oh, yeah.
Lily Collins.
Dang.
And it's very similar in the like, yeah, progression of time and,
mm-hmm.
like seeing them throughout many years. But I feel like that is what makes movies like that so good, is,
yeah.
showing like how well established their relationship is.
Oh yeah. I think I was reading this review from the AV Club, and they said that there was like When Harry Met Sally DNA in virtually every romantic comedy that's been made since. And I think that really just speaks to like the strength of this as a film, like on,
yes.
its own, to be so like, you like, there's so many things from this that are just repeated, even like movies we'll discuss later. Like you were saying, like, we watched Anyone But You before When Harry Met Sally, and there's this car shot in that,
mm-hmm.
one. You're like, oh, it's just like When Harry Met Sally, and it is just,
there's
like When
Harry almost
Met
the
Sally.
Same shot,
yeah.
in the movie. And you realize as you watch more rom-coms that it's like, oh yeah, there's like certain things that are just like embedded in the DNA of,
yeah.
these movies. Totally.
And I think I've grown to appreciate that more, like,
mm-hmm.
rom-com as a genre. Like, I think it does get dismissed a lot, kind of as like, oh, it's like a woman's genre and like that sort
chick
of thing.
Flicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think it really gets belittled for that, when I think like you know, to write a compelling romance is hard. Mm-hmm. Like, because it's not just about, like, giving the main characters chemistry. It's like, you got to make, like, likable side characters. Yes. And, like, an interesting plot. And, like, all these other, like, even, like, in the 80s, like, they're not really working off any conventions that have been established. No. Like, they're kind of, like, building up these conventions for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, I think a really, like, standout part of this movie for me is the side cast.
Like, I was going to say, like, yeah. Carrie Fisher, and I don't know the name of the actor who plays her love interest, but yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, these feel like real friends that they would have,
yeah.
And, like, real people.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, the comedy really works in this as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the romance is obviously, like, the focus, but the comedy is not, like, cast aside by any means.
No.
Like, there's very much emphasis on that just as much as the rom-com. And I feel like Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal have this sort of, like, rapport.
Yes.
That really works. Like, you can, like, believe that it's like, oh, they don't hate each other, but they just don't, you know, immediately, like, love.
Yeah, you can feel that they're, like, yeah, at the beginning when they're slowly getting to know each other, that there's, like, they're not held back, but there's just, like, something that the other doesn't quite get about the other one. They're like, I just can't believe that you're like this or like this.
Yeah. And I think another, like, part of this movie I really enjoyed was, like, the clothing.
Yes.
Like, especially the big sweaters.
Oh my god, like, I want all the cable knits.
No, literally, like, I feel like watching these movies from the 80s and 90s and seeing people, like, wearing this clothing that's, like, built to last, mm-hmm. It really just brings a, like, sharp contrast, like, how much of, like, the fashion we have today is just, like, so, like, you know, it's meant to be, like, worn once and discarded sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's so hard to find a good, thick, like, sweater that'll last now.
And we were both talking about, like, near the beginning of the movie, the, like, horrendous outfit that Meg Ryan has on. And she's wearing, like, a cardigan over a, like, button-up shirt. And
so many layers.
Like, beige. They're not cargo shorts, but they're, like,
dad shorts.
Dad shorts. Yeah, they're, like, yeah, shorts your dad would wear fishing.
Yeah.
is the vibe. And we were both just like, what the... Like, yeah. What is she wearing?
Like, like socks, like, pulled up. Like, her knees are, like, the only things exposed.
Yeah,
on
I'm just
leg,
like,
but in the weirdest
what
way
is
possible.
Going on here, girl?
Yeah. You don't even clock in the shorts until, like, a long shot happens, which you're like, I wish I didn't see that. I wish
yeah, you're like, I wish I hadn't
shorts.
Been looking at that part of the that part of the screen.
Yeah. I think there are some crazy, very 80s fashion choices in this. Like, especially... Oh my god, there's this one outfit that Sally wears. She's just got this big hat on.
Oh my god, I was gonna say the hat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is, like, all of her other outfits, like, it feels like all of her outfits are either, like, so cool and, like, I want that in my closet immediately, or it's just, like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen anyone wear. Like, I really appreciate, like, how kind of, like, contrasting, like, Harry and Sally's looks are. Mm-hmm. Like, Sally is very bold, either in, like, her, like, stylishness,
yes.
Or in whatever's happening in her other outfits, but, like, Harry's, like, he's just wearing pants and a shirt.
He's, like, always very, like, I feel like consistently dressed throughout the film, and I feel like Sally is very, yeah, she wears, like, totally different, like, her vibes are totally different in every scene, and I feel like that kind of shows her as a character trying to, like, establish herself in her career, because that's, like, another big point of the film is, like, being, like, having it all kind of idea, like, having a career and a relationship and kids, and I feel like she's kind of trying to, like, figure out where she stands with that, and her outfit choices kind of show that, her, like, what am I doing?
No, she's definitely more of, like, the erratic character. It feels like Harry is very, like, kind of secure, like, in his mm-hmm. life and in himself, and it doesn't seem like he's, not that he's not striving for much, but it's like he knows what his end goal is, and he's satisfied with being able to reach that. But, like, Sally is constantly, like, searching for something more, like, kind of mm-hmm. like looking for this, like, perfect thing. Whereas, like, Harry, you know, everything kind of slots in nicely for him. But then, like, when it starts to kind of
fall apart,
like,
he
just, like, it's like, oh, yeah,
he's like,
can't
what
stop
am I
thinking
doing?
About his wife. Like, even when he goes on that date and he's like, yeah, and she said she was from this university, which is not where his wife went. He's like, but it's a top 10. You
yeah,
know?
But it's, like, similar enough that I couldn't stop thinking about my wife for the whole date.
Exactly. So I think it's, like, it's very interesting, like, how, like, endearing these characters' mm-hmm. contrasts are. Especially, I really like how it's even addressed, like, when Harry, like, has his little monologue at the end. He, like, notes all these little quirks about Sally. He's like, oh, I love how you do this, and I love how you do that. And I was like, yeah, this is awesome.
And that, I think that's the part of it that feels very, like, real and human is, mm-hmm. yeah, like, all her little, all her little like quirks and stuff. Yeah. It's like he notices them, and that's what makes them like perfect for each other almost, is that he like they love each other despite their flaws kind of thing.
And it's like the flaw, like I always think back to like this sort of idea of like, oh, when you like really love someone, like the flaws kind of like become like just quirks instead of like issues, you know?
Totally.
It's like, you know, maybe for someone who didn't love Sally, like her crazy way of like ordering sandwiches would like totally put them off, which
she's so specific.
She's like, she's so valid in that. Like she's got, there's this one scene where she's eating a ham sandwich. Honest to God, there's like 10 pieces of ham on that thing.
No, we were both like, oh my God, how many pieces of ham is she going to put on this sandwich? Yeah. And you can like, it's something you don't notice the, like, I didn't notice the first time I was watching it, but then I was like, what is she doing?
Yeah. The food in this movie is truly insane. Like, even, like, when Harry's eating the grapes at the beginning, like,
oh my God, just, like, off the vine.
Crazy behavior. Like, also, spitting out the seeds, like, I've never had to spit seeds out of grapes. No. I don't know what sort of watermelon hybrid he's eating, because that is, like.
No, if there's seeds in my grapes, I don't want them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm also not just keeping them raw, like, next to, like, my baseball bat.
Yeah, it, like, in a stranger's car while you move to New York. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I do appreciate, like, I think this is very, like, an 80s movie thing, especially given, like, how small the runtimes usually were, of just immediately starting, like, bang, in Ramirez. Like, we don't know how Harry knows Sally. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't add more to the plot if they had, like, a like little exposition dump of, like, oh, my best friend Sally's going to come pick you up now.
Yeah, well, they kind of slowly, like, she knows his girlfriend, and they're both moving to New York. So they're like, why not? Would they not do a road trip across the country together? Yeah,
of course.
Meet cute.
Exactly.
That's the whole purpose, basically. Literally.
And I really do appreciate this movie, like, as a romantic comedy staple, because I feel like I've seen some, like, rom-com staples I just haven't enjoyed as much because I don't find, like, because the characters are just irritating, but, like, these ones are, like, they're endearing.
I think that's the thing about the genre, is it's, like, there's a lot of really, really good rom-coms, and there's a lot of not-so-good rom-coms, and that's, I think that's the thing with any genre, but I think rom-coms get dismissed more because they are classified as movies made for women, like chick flicks and stuff. Like, I did a program where, and I did my final project on rom-coms at BCIT, and I had my teacher say to me, like, oh, but why are you doing this? This is so cute and fluffy was the phrase he kept using. And I was like, but it's not. Like, I don't know. They can be cute and fluffy, but they also are like meaningful and fun to watch. And why can't that be important?
Yeah, like it feels like we place so much more emphasis, or like we recognize the validity of other like genres so much more, like a Western or like a horror. Like those are both very like modal genres in the same way a rom-com is. But like they're kind of, especially I feel like horror recently, like people have started to take it more seriously. Yeah, and been like considering it's more than like, oh, just like, you know, a B-movie slasher flick. Like there's been a renewed seriousness around that. And I'm kind of interested to see if rom-coms will ever get that sort of treatment.
I know,
like I've definitely seen like rom-coms, especially when Harry Met Sally, used like as evidence for like, oh, you know, like in all manner of things. Like I've seen it as like, oh, here's why fast fashion is bad, and it'll point, like when Harry Met Sally, was like, oh, are we missing out on like connectedness in life? And like I've seen it used a lot as evidence, but never quite broken down. So I would like to see maybe like more of like a critical examination of like rom-coms, or seeing like examining the rom-com as a genre, not like immediately just dismissing it as like, oh, background movie.
Yes, totally. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, it's a movie I put on in the background. And I feel like the fact that now most rom-coms just get like are Netflix originals, or just get dumped on streaming services doesn't help with that, because people immediately are like, well, if it's not getting a theatrical release, it's less valid as a film. And I will say, not all Netflix rom-coms are great.
Yeah.
But there are a few on there that I'm like, these are really good movies, but no one knows about them because they just got dumped on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. No, like films that just don't get a theatrical release and like, go straight to streaming, it's always devastating to see how underappreciated they are.
No,
it's like like I feel like a theater does add so much to it. So I'm such a proponent of like releasing theaters if possible.
Yes,
but if not,
re-release
don't
in
it.
Theaters.
Literally
seeing Pride
back.
And Prejudice in theaters in April. I was like, oh my God, this is everything I've hoped for and more.
Theater just adds so much to it.
Yeah,
but yeah. No, rom-coms, watch them more.
Yeah. And we love rom-coms.
I think on that note, we'll play a little bit of a song from When Harry Met Sally, because it has a pretty good soundtrack. I'll say that. It's a banger. Yeah. So this is Isn't It Romantic by Ella Fitzgerald off the When Harry Met Sally soundtrack.
A dream that can be heard, isn't it romantic? Moving shadows write the oldest magic word. I hear the breezes playing in the trees above. To be young on such a night as this, isn't it romantic? Every note that's sung is like a lover's kiss. Sweet symbols in the moonlight, do you mean that I will fall in love perchance? Isn't it romance?
That was Isn't It Romantic by Ella Fitzgerald off of the When Harry Met Sally soundtrack. Now, jumping forward quite a few years in time, we're going to be talking about Crazy Stupid Love, which I love this rom-com.
I love Crazy Stupid Love.
I think, I don't know, something about it just really works for me. What do you think is your favorite, do you have favorite part of this movie, favorite anything?
That's a good question. I don't know. I just love the way it flows. And mm-hmm. I to jump ahead in the film, I do think that the reveal of Emma Stone,
yes.
Sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen Crazy Stupid Love, but it's been out for many years, of Emma Stone being Cal and Julianne Moore's daughter,
yeah.
That is a cinematic reveal right there.
It's so good how it all builds into this intertwining narrative.
Yeah.
I really enjoy how carefully constructed that is.
I feel
a lot of there are a lot of rom-coms that play off that misunderstanding kind of trope, or there's that hidden secret thing, but usually we as the audience know about
yes.
it. So I find it interesting that they kind of withhold this from us and let us learn about it at the same time the characters do,
which is it's just so well done. And then the whole fight sequence that happens after is so funny.
I love how much this one kind of is able to do the romance, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Romance is a very central theme, but the comedy also really shines through in this.
Yeah.
I feel
it's
a lot
very
of
funny.
Yeah. Especially the physical comedy. A lot of rom-coms I find it's the witty wordplay banter and mm-hmm. maybe there's a bit of physical comedy thrown in, but this is very
very banter, very
This is very reminiscent to me, same similar styles, Nice Guys. I think
yes.
there's a very similar
Nice
comedy. It's incredible. I think I'm just biased towards Ryan Gosling. Anything he's in,
he's so,
I'll watch that.
And I think that's part of the charm of this movie is he is so charming.
Yes.
And you completely believe him from the minute you see him. Mm-hmm. I think he just has aura. I think
yeah.
that's the vibe is he just, you're like, oh yeah, this is totally he's this player who's picking up all these girls at bars. I 100% believe that.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think him and Emma Stone also have this, like, insane, like, comedic chemistry. Like,
they're even, so, like, good together.
Amazing. I love them. Like, La La Land, like, all of that.
I've never finished La La Land. Really? I do think this is the superior Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone coupling.
I will
coupling.
Say, this one is, this is definitely more fun, I'll say.
Yeah, less devastating.
Yeah. No, La La Land rips my heart out every time I see it. But this one is just, it's just such a good time.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're both such talented, like, dramatic and comedic actors. I think you really see that kind of coming through in this performance. Yes. Like, you're like, okay, these guys very much, like, have an understanding of comedic beats, but also how to pull back on that, like, deliver, like, a genuine performance. Like, it feels like everyone's very invested in this.
Yeah,
as well.
I just rewatched part of it last night. But you really see how, like, he seems in control the whole film, kind of leading up to, like, roughly the halfway point. And he's, like, yeah, flirting with all these girls, so charming. They all want to go home with him. And then you, like, finally they meet again, and she just kind of completely disarms him. She's just, like, questioning all his, like, moves that he usually goes with. And he's, and of course, like, the implication is they're going to sleep together, but then they just end up, like, talking all night and having, like, a genuine connection, which is honestly, like, more romantic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, like, how they kind of had those, like, subversive moments where they, it's, like, it's very aware of the tropes, like, of the genre, and it does, like, well, it does conform to some of them, like, you know, the guys get the girl in the end, and, like, it's all very much, like, wrapped up with a nice neat bow. Like, there are these moments of kind of subversion that I think really keep you guessing with the film, like, kind of establish a sense of intrigue that makes you want to, like,
you don't completely know where it's going.
Yeah,
and I think that's that's part of why it's so fun to watch.
Yeah. Like, I think the charm of it is definitely how unexpected it is.
Even, like, I've watched this movie too many times, probably. But, like, every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, right. Like, there's moments where I'm like, I forgot about that. Like, the Steve Carell sleeping with the teacher.
Yeah.
The son's teacher.
Oh my
I'm always
gosh.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Like, it's got such a stacked, like, side cast as well. Like, I feel like they're also, like, this is another movie that is very much amplified by having a very competent, like, side character sort of roster. Like, I think everyone is really given their all and, like, understands, like,
it's a good ensemble.
Yeah. No, totally. And, like, I like how, like, the film, like, we've got kind of our central, like, character, obviously, like, Steve Carell's character, but how it kind of shifts around and, like, gives time to, like, the other characters as well. Like, I don't feel too tied to him as, like, our central, like, driving force. Like, it's very much, we're just, he's,
it always comes back to him, but it's not, you don't have to completely, like, follow him.
It's not about him, which I think that's kind of another tough thing with rom-coms. That's another tough thing with rom-coms, I think, is, like, if you don't immediately have, like, a very likable protagonist, it's like the whole movie is just, like, you don't want to watch it, because it's like, God, you know, it's only gonna be
you're like, oh,
that one
God,
character. And, like, it's all about them, like, all about, like, everyone, like, falling in love with this guy. You're like, I don't like him.
Even, especially I find with, like, female protagonists, a trope that they fall into a lot is the, like, not like other girls, which a lot of people get annoyed by, to completely fair. But I think all of these movies don't completely fall into that trope, which I like, because especially with, like, some more recent ones, I feel like it's always like, okay, here we go again.
No, totally. I think the one gripe I do have with this movie, I think, is kind of how, like, the, like, nude photograph subplot with, like, Jessica and Robbie. Like, I feel like the whole thing is, like,
it's a little creepy.
Like, I feel, I feel like it would be tough to kind of, like, have a very serious, like, hard-hitting conversation about, like, the implications of, like, her giving, like, you know, her nudes to this, like,
to the dad she babysits for.
Like, I feel like that would be, like, trying to balance, like, having a, like, serious discussion about,
he was,
like,
in possession of child pornography.
Yeah.
Like, like, he can't do that.
Like, in the middle of, like, a comedy film would be, like, very tough to do. So it's kind of like, it's weird they just kind of throw it in there, because it feels like, oh, this is a bit
too
much of a lighthearted
take. One storyline that I feel like never is totally resolved.
Yeah.
But I do like with the son, I feel like he, like, they very intentionally are like, what he's doing to this girl is creepy. And you have to realize that, because he's kind of seeing all these, like, tropes sort of things that, like, big grand romantic gestures to try to get her. And you realize, you're like, this stuff is so creepy. Like, but yeah, her storyline, especially with the nudes, I'm always like, oh, great. Yeah, that's here we go again.
Like, the one moment from this movie where I'm like, oh. But, like, everything else in this movie is so strong that it's kind of like, and this is, like, such, it's not done in such, like, a horrible way that it makes it unwatchable. There's just a moment where you're like, oh,
it's cringe.
Very 2010s.
Like, oh, yeah. Very, it's very, I think it came out 2011. Yeah. Yeah, it feel, you have very post-super bad.
Like, you can feel it in this movie. But I think it's definitely carried, like, on the shoulders of the performances of everyone in it. Like, I'm always there for a Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone moment.
Gosling.
Just, it's all, yeah. I think this movie, especially the pacing of it, is really well done. Because it's a bit of a longer movie. Not like,
yeah, I think it's like 2.5 hours. But it is like hours, a
2-ish hour movie. Which for a rom-com can feel long.
Long, yeah. But, if it's not done right, yeah.
But this one definitely keeps it snappy, you know, keeps it rolling, which I really appreciate. And it's got a pretty good soundtrack as well. Like, kind of crazy.
It's again, like, very 2010s, I feel like, when you watch it.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, that's not a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, you know? Sometimes we all just need a little 2010s radio pop.
And they have, like, the little Dirty Dancing moment.
Oh, that's reference. Beautiful. Like, yeah, that's another thing. Is this one really understands its influences, I think, and kind of wears them on its sleeve.
Yes.
So I really appreciate how much emphasis it places on that. I think that's really well done.
And I think they acknowledge those as, like, cheesy but fun still and, like, intertwine it well into the film. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. And I think on that note, I'll play you guys something from the soundtrack. This is Almanac by The Acorn, who are from Quebec, so Canada represent. And in Ryan Gosling, I guess, double Canada.
Oh my god, yeah. He's Canadian.
I always forget that, but, like, yeah, he is. That's Canadian
representation.
Love to see it. Love to see it on screen. But yeah, here is Almanac by The Acorn.
Oh,
All right. That was Almanac by The Acorn. And with that, we're going to be rolling on to our most recent movie of the bunch, which is Anyone But You. And how many times have you seen this?
Too many times. I've seen this movie, I think I saw it like 3 times in theaters. And then like, I think a second time, like not in theaters with you. So probably like 4 or 5 times at this point.
Oh my God. How do you think your perception of like Anyone But You has changed over these 4 watches?
I feel like whenever I watch a movie in theaters, I'm automatically like, oh, that was so good.
Oh, yeah.
And so watching it, I think as I, the more I've watched it, the more I'm like, oh, this has some flaws.
Yeah.
But like the first time I watched it, I was like, rom-coms are so back. Yeah. We're in a movie theater watching a rom-com. This is so fun. But I think as time went on, I've been like, interesting choice.
Yeah. I did hear a lot of, like, especially when this first came out, because, yeah, the first time I watched it was with you, which was Friday, so it was fairly fresh in my mind. But I remember when this did come out, like, I heard so much about, oh, rom-coms are so back, you know, we're so back with this. And I feel like a lot of the time, like, especially when there's been, like, a drought of good movies in a genre, like, people are just desperate for anything. Like, to me, this is kind of the same as, like, Thunderbolts, where it's like, okay, maybe it's not the best thing Marvel's ever put out, but if you like hold it up against like the past like 4 they've released, it's like
it's amazing.
Yeah it's incredible, you know, like where are the Oscars?
I think that's the thing about it, is like people were like, I'm starving for rom-com content, this is an amazing movie. So I think it got overhyped a lot. But people want rom-coms in theaters.
That's also the thing, like getting a theatrical release does like so much for, like this
it
movie
made so much money.
Insane. Like, oh God, how much is it, like 200 million or something?
Yeah, it was like 200 or 300 million. Yeah. I feel like it made worldwide.
Yeah.
But we Googled it and it only cost like 25 million or something like that to make.
Which you can definitely see.
Yeah. Oh,
You're watching it like, oh, there are no extras in this.
Nope. There are so many bowls of fruit, but no
extras. The fruit budget for this movie was crazy. $25 million and $24 million of those dollars went to buying goddamn oranges. Because, like, there's like 8 people in this house.
And
there's
paying
no way
for Australia. I think that was $20 million was Australia. $2 million was fruit.
Yeah. $3 million was Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah.
All the other actors.
The rest of the cast.
Thrown to the wolves, $500 each.
Yeah.
But
volunteering.
Yeah. But speaking of actors, I think Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney do definitely have very like a good rapport in this. Like, I think especially I'd never really seen Sydney Sweeney in a comedic role before.
No.
So this was definitely like a very interesting shift. And I think she does show off that she has this, like,
she can do comedy
chops. Yeah. Which I think it would be interesting to see kind of where she goes from here, having this under her belt, like alongside Euphoria. Like if she continues to sort
much
of,
more dramatic stuff. Yeah.
And like I guess she has been doing more dramatic stuff, like with the like Immaculate, or was it
Immaculate? Horror movie.
Like, she's definitely been bouncing around in genres a lot. Like, it feels like Glenn Powell is fairly like, okay, he's either in
action,
a plane or in a romance, like that
totally.
Sort of thing. Like, even like Hitman, which was like another like romantic comedy.
That was like a good
Glenn
combo
Powell.
Of action and like comedy.
Like, it feels like he's kind of, he's very like fluid between genres, but he is like, those are his two
kind of he
know?
Has like ones that he sticks to because he knows he's really good at them.
And then Sydney Sweeney feels a lot more like ambient to me, and I think that's because she's also a bit earlier on in her career.
She's
Glenn
only
Powell.
Like, we were googling it,
she's
like 27 like 20s, 26 something like that.
Which is, I feel like they really play up like this age gap in the movie, and they're not like,
they're only like
that far apart, I guess 5 years or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. Like, I think he was playing older than he actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kept making like, jokes about the age gap. I'm like, he does not look that much older than her.
They were acting like this guy was on, like, death's doorstep. And it's like, you could tell me they're both, like,
they're acting like he was over 40 and she was in her 20s.
Yeah.
And that
no,
is not
literally.
The case.
They definitely do play up the differences between the two a lot. Like, especially they're like, oh, this petite, tiny girl and this huge, hulking man.
Yeah.
It's like, he's entirely, like, 6'1", she's like 5'4". Like,
it's not
they're both
that.
Like average heights, it feels like.
Yeah, which I feel like is very, not like cheap comedy necessarily, but kind of like, okay, you can't find anything else to like make fun of in the differences between these two.
Yeah, I think the comedy in this one is definitely more like lowbrow, I think, or less, like you aren't like laughing at the cleverness of it. Like, you're like, okay, like, he just threw his pants off.
Yeah.
This is so
off
funny.
A cliff. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah.
That's another thing I wasn't expecting, was how explicit this movie was.
Like, I forgot until I watched it again because it had been like over a year since I'd seen it, and I was like, whoa.
It's like they create like full frontal nudity just for like this like gag that doesn't even need it, which is so crazy. Like the moment it hits you, Jesus, okay.
You're like, okay, oh, I'm seeing butt now. Okay, great.
Which is so odd. Like for me, I was thinking this was like going to be like the cinematic equivalent of sort of like bashing like a Ken and Barbie doll together and being like, they're kissing, but no.
No.
Mm-mm. No, this is a lot more explicit than Ken and Barbie. Like... This is, I think I wasn't expecting that just because I felt like this movie was like, I don't know, for some reason, like to me, it's very like, catered towards like tweens and like that sort of thing.
Yeah, like, it kind of feels like it should be for a younger audience. Mm-hmm. Just, and maybe that's because like, I feel like before this, Sydney Sweeney had done a lot of like teen stuff. Like,
yeah.
I know Euphoria should not be watched by teenagers, arguably, but like it was very much catered towards.
Yeah.
Teenagers, because it takes place in high school, so I feel like that might be part of that kind of feeling.
I think that's definitely what was like pushing me towards that, was like, oh, okay, she's like a younger actress. And even like Top Gun Maverick, I think, was like very much more like, okay, I've seen this like very popular with like teens and like that sort of thing. Like this is like a
teenage
high school
boys
movie.
Kind of vibe. Yeah,
like that sort of thing. So I think I was expecting to play that niche, but it feels like they were very much like punching for an older audience, which is interesting because then.
Came out, I'm thinking, like 2023.
Yeah.
And I went to see it with my sister. And I can't remember if it had an R rating or a 14A or something like that. But I went and I think we were almost like, oh, can my sister come see this movie?
Yeah.
And she could. But it was like,
Yeah, it feels like the sort of movie like you shouldn't have to question that. Like I look at the poster, it presents itself as this very sanitized, sort of typical, like, oh, romantic comedy, silly goofs and gags.
I think that's part of it with like it's based on a Shakespeare play as well. Like 10 Things I Hate About You is another like Shakespeare rom-com, but that one is like set in high school. It's very like all ages kind of thing.
Yeah.
And whereas this one I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. This is more adult.
This is
perhaps.
Yeah, definitely more adult.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen 10 Things I Hate About You. I really want to. Everyone in my life is telling me to see 10 Things I Hate
You would
about
love
you.
It.
I am just waiting
it's
for
very
the day.
Your vibe.
Like I know this is one of those movies where it's like inevitably I will run into this at some point. I'm waiting for that day when it happens because I know it's going
to
change
my life.
It's
so good.
Yeah. So I think that will definitely be the superior Shakespeare adaptation.
Oh, absolutely.
This one does something very interesting with the Shakespeare quotes. Like they'll just occasionally drop them in at the beginning of scenes.
Yeah. It just like kind of flashes of it in the background or like on the beach.
Yeah. And maybe I like zoned out because this is a bit of a longer movie. Like this is very much your typical.
It's longer than
like,
I remember. Like
2.5 hours. 15.
Yeah.
Like it's a theater movie, you know? Like it's, you know, not The Brutalist or anything, but it's for a rom-com for what it is. Like you're like, I'm kind of surprised they managed to stretch this as much as they did. And it feels like they did kind of drop the Shakespeare thing like halfway through. Like
Until like that one scene at the end where they're in like, it's like the montage and they're in the baseball stadium.
Yeah.
And it has like the Much Ado About Nothing poster in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
which is so, why are they in a baseball stadium? Like, we don't know.
It also, as you're watching it and the montage, it definitely feels like there was a lot of this movie they cut out. Like, storylines or scenes or something that could have, I think it could have been, like, fixed to make, like, a better film overall.
Because I think in terms of even talking about, like, temporality, like, of how Harry Met Sally is very explicit in, like, 3 years later, 5 years later. This
very
one, it's
clear.
Like, It's very vague in this one. Like, there's a scene where, like, Bea, Sydney Sweeney's character, and Ben, Glenn Powell's character, like, hook up. Or they don't hook up. They, like, do they? In the first scene? Or it's, like, they, like, spend the night chatting and eating grilled cheese.
It's, like, the implication is they were going to hook up. But it's kind of the same thing as the, like, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, where they just, and they have such a deep connection that he makes her grilled cheese and they just stay up all night talking and then she sneaks out in the morning.
Yeah. And then, like, the next scene, they're at, like, a club and they run into each other. And I was convinced this was, like, a week later, but it's been, like, half a year.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's been so long. And you're like, oh, okay. Hi. What?
It's like, they don't really make any effort to, like, establish this right off the bat. Like, it's like, an hour later where they're like, wow, I can't believe it's like 6 months since we last ate grilled cheese or something.
Yeah. And then as the sisters, like it's not his sister, but like his childhood best friend and her sister, their relationship progresses. You realize it's been like multiple years since they first met. And you're like, okay, it feels like you're trying to do a When Harry Met Sally, but you kind of failed in that aspect.
Like it definitely, it kind of like bashes you over the head with like other rom-com references.
Yes.
But all it does is like kind of highlight how it's like not working in the same ways as those other rom-coms, I think.
And like I feel like the budget is very, yeah. I definitely noticed it more upon this watch. I was like, yeah, you're right. There's no, you don't meet any of the other wedding guests except for the central kind of like six background characters.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, okay, cool. This random girl, who, well, not random, she's like a cousin, but I'm like, I feel like there's got to be like a best friend who would be the maid of honor, not your cousin as bachelorette.
Yeah, totally. Like it's definitely you feel the budget is kind of like the best way to say it, which is it's kind of interesting like how small the budget was considering like the star power of who is in it.
Yeah,
like Glenn Powell, Sydney Sweeney, even like Alexandra Shipp. Like she's done. Yeah. A lot of
tons
stuff.
Of movies.
Like,
yeah.
You know, if it was just like Alexandra Shipp, I wouldn't be expecting like a huge budget.
But yeah.
With someone like Glenn Powell, like.
I think Sydney Sweeney has her own production company that was like involved in the film.
Yeah. Because like, good for her. She must have made bank.
Oh,
this
she probably
thing.
Made so much money. But I think that if she's teased like a potential sequel or Ooh. Another like rom com with them. So.
Anyone but two.
That's a good title.
Huge. Hire me, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, write the title for her movie. Come on. But yeah, it's definitely you're like, okay, yeah. The budget.
Yeah. I think it's also like some of the color grading, it makes it feel like feverish almost. Like you're watching, this is so bright.
Yeah.
Why is it so saturated?
I think I didn't remember it being that saturated. And I think part of it is like the way movies translate from like theater to at-home TVs now. Because sometimes I watch movies and I'm like, I don't remember it looking this terrible.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm watching it on my TV or my laptop and I'm like, it's definitely because I saw this in a theater the first time it looked way better.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, I think most movies look better in theaters, if not all movies look better in theaters.
Almost definitely.
Oh, yeah. But I think I am glad that this like kind of has renewed interest in the rom-com genre, because it's not that it was dead. Like, I mean, Crazy Stupid Love was only however many years ago. It was 2011. That was
almost 15 years ago.
It was a while ago. But I'm sure there have been like good rom-coms that have come out between then and now.
There's definitely lots of good rom-coms that I feel like came out between the, like, I feel like 2010s was a very like comedy heavy, like lots of rom-coms, comedic movies, and then kind of like tapered off.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the last few years there's definitely been more rom-coms, but they've just again been like dumped on Netflix.
Yeah.
So less people know about them. But like Glenn Powell's in a really good one on Netflix called Set It Up with I think Zoe Deutsch. And that one's I feel like really fun.
Yeah.
And more kind of maybe what this movie was going for.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. There's lots of good rom-coms.
Oh yeah. I'd say there's definitely like of the three, this is definitely the weakest link to me, but it's not like abysmal. Like
no,
it has its moments. It has good things. Everyone's acting is very good. Like they're all they all play off each other very well. And there's a lot of like charisma.
There's definitely like chemistry and charisma.
Oh yeah, like, I think all of these movies are very strong.
That was like a whole talking point when the movie was coming out too. Was like their personal relationships outside of the film, and like maybe if something happened between them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of got turned into marketing for the film. They were like, well, now I have to see this movie because maybe they have like real life chemistry.
Yeah, which I think you definitely like. You watch it, you're like, okay, yeah, these two play off each other very well.
Yes,
like this does not fall into the like you know unlikable lead.
No.
Syndrome at all. And it does, like the other two, have a very banging score. I'll say that.
Yes.
The soundtrack. There's one song, Ben's Serenity song, mentioned Serenity multiple song. Times through the movie. The iconic, the one and only, Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield, which is just another, it's so 2010s. Like, this was like, this feels like it should have been on the Crazy Stupid Love score.
And I feel like that's maybe why people gravitated to this movie so much, is people were like, this feels like golden age of rom-coms are back. Like, just the vibe around the movie, which I completely understand.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's definitely very strong in its, it's not trying to reinvent the wheel. Like,
no.
It knows the rom-com genre. It's pulling from its influences. It does it well. Like, it acknowledges them. It, you know, imitates them anyways.
Just the overall story, I feel like, could have been better established.
Yeah,
for sure.
But a banger nonetheless. Song, if you haven't heard it, you definitely have, unless you've been living under a rock for like the past 10 years. But this is Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield.
I dirty window. Let the sun illuminate.
All right, that was Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield. So I hope that made you feel like you were listening to like Top of the Pops 2010s. It certainly made me feel like that. I'm just imagining like, God, it's 2014 again. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like that's kind of the beauty of a rom-com is it's just it's fun, you know?
Yeah, I feel like and it places you in like a time and a place. Yeah. Too. I feel like Harry Met Sally does a very good job.
Oh,
of
yeah.
That.
Like, I think if a rom-com will do one thing, it is make you long to go to New York. Like, oh. The moment we start watching When Harry Met Sally, I was gripping the couch.
I
need to go to New York in the fall. I've been once. I did not love New York. But, like, every time I watch any, like, rom-com specifically set in New York, they show the city in such a beautiful way that I'm like, God, I need to go back. I'm like, I need to see JFK Airport again.
I've gone, a couple times in the fall. And every time I go in with the mindset, I'm like, I'm going to be in a rom-com on this trip. That's the whole goal.
Oh, yeah. Just Unwritten on loop.
On like how rom- long, 7-8 hour playlist, yeah, going the whole time.
Oh yeah, no, I feel like the rom-com, like as a genre, like I feel like we tend to dismiss feel good movies like too much, but it's like,
yeah,
sometimes you just want to sit down and not even turn off your brain, because like if you like actually watch these movies like critically, it's like kind of interesting to see how, like, they do or don't, like, subvert, like, gender expectations mm-hmm. or, like, even, like, social norms of the time.
Yeah. Like there are very interesting social commentaries mm-hmm. within each of these films. I feel like on, like, specifically for the female characters.
Yeah. Like, I think you definitely see an evolution of, like, kind of, like, how women are regarded in film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always so interesting, like, because you look at the rom-com genre and so much of it comes from, like, these, like, female writers, like, female directors, like,
yeah.
And it's a very, like, female-centric genre, I feel like, a lot of that time, like, even behind the scenes, which does kind of lend to its dismissal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, you get these female characters that are often more, like, poignant and, like, nuanced because it's a woman writing them.
Yeah, totally.
And, like, you compare it to, like, other female characters and, like, other modal genres, like action or something. Like, you're watching Transformers and, like, Megan Fox's character. It's like, that's not, that's like, nothing. Oh God. That's like a nothing burger of a character.
It's very, very male gaze.
Yeah. Like, even, like, something, like, I wouldn't call Jennifer's Body a rom-com, per se, but it's more, like, romantic.
It's like a focus. Teen horror movie, yeah. kind of. Yeah.
And it's, like, that just treated, like, Megan Fox's character with so much more, like, depth. That, like, she's an actual character.
And I feel like that movie got dismissed a lot
yeah.
when it came out.
No, totally.
But it had, like, a couple years ago, like, quite the resurgence and people yeah. talking about, like, what an interesting, like, commentary it has yeah. as a film.
No, totally. I feel like rom-coms are definitely, like, it's all reliable, you know? Like, You never go in with too high expectations. You're always like, it's like going to eat a meal at your favorite restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, yeah, I know what I'm going to get. Like, I'm going to be happy with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to come out. It's going to be what I expect. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to leave and have a good time. Like, is it going to be groundbreaking and crazy and change the way I look at everything? Probably not, but not every movie has
time.
To.
No, yeah. exactly. And I think that's why it just gets dismissed mm-hmm. so much, too. But, like, 9 times out of 10 when I'm, like, at home and I'm like, I want to watch a movie, but I don't know what I want to
yeah.
watch. It's going to be, like, a comedy or a rom-com.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I know I will have a good time.
Yeah.
That's also why I rewatch movies all the time. Because
yeah.
I'm like, I know I like this one.
No, totally. Like, I feel like there's definitely something to be said about how we, like, think of cinema as this thing that always has to be, like, you know, this, like, 4-hour-long art house movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, it doesn't have to be. And
or
sometimes
super profound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I find, like, coming away from these movies that are kind of predictable kind of have more of an impact on me. Like, especially,
yeah.
like, you know, something like When Harry Met Sally or even, like, thinking, like, other sort of rom-coms, like, outside of that. Like, yeah, Crazy Stupid Love or even, like, if it counts, like, Before Sunset or Before Sunrise. Like,
mm-hmm.
these sort of movies, it's like, yeah, you know, it just kind of makes me like, damn. Love is all around us.
And
like,
that's so great and fun.
Exactly. It makes
cute.
You want to go on, like, a little walk and, like, look at leaves and stuff. And it's like, yeah.
It makes
beautiful.
I think I always used to be like, yeah, I'm going to go, like, live a rom-com, romanticize my life. Like, it makes you want to romanticize everything.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Yeah. You need a little bit of that to get through the day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'd say we're going to probably, you know, we're almost done, which is crazy. So any last minute rom-com recommendations, things to add on before we round out?
Definitely one I feel like people have seen less, which I mentioned earlier, is Love, Rosie. And I don't know where you can watch it, but yeah, it's Lily Collins and Sam Claflin, and it's super cute and very fun. So that's one I like and come back to all the time.
Honestly, I'll have to check it out. Like, after this, let's say I'm warming up to rom-coms.
It's like a friendship over many, many years thing. So very kind of When Harry Met Sally coded.
Beautiful. That's honestly, that's what I like in a movie, you know?
Yeah.
I think more friends to lovers, less whatever was happening in anyone but you.
Yes, less hate to
yeah.
love, maybe.
Hate to love. Hate to love.
Yeah.
Enemies to lovers, overrated. Friends to lovers,
underrated. Completely.
Bring back friends to lovers, or just bring it back to my attention.
Yes,
I
yes.
think.
Bring more. No, I think we just need more of that in
exactly.
general.
Bring it back in cinemas. And bring the rom-coms back to cinemas.
Yes. More rom-coms in movie theaters, please.
Literally.
I beg.
Literally. But yeah, that was our rom-com episode. Thank you again, Madeline, for coming
Thank
on.
Thank you
this
for having
so
me.
This was so much fun. I can't believe you've never been on the podcast before because you were such a natural.
It was so fun. I'm very happy to be on. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Well, absolutely. I'm sure we'll hear your voice again
next year. I would be happy to come back.
Beautiful. That's what I want to hear. So yeah, real world. You know me. I've been Emma.
I'm Madeline.
I'll be back again next week, 4 to 5, same time, same place. Hope to see you there. All right. See you guys.